Early holiday deals are here, and so are amazing deals at Amazon. You'll save so much on early holiday gifts for the kitchen, like appliances and cookware. You'll have money left over for an ice cream scoop that's perfect for serving up dessert or a perfectly shaped snowball.
Think fast. Gotcha.
Or that cutlery set, so you can carve up the turkey with surgical precision. Oh, what fun it is to save. Shop early holiday deals now.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get back to more Mark Crotty on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Well, one thing we know going into this season for the Chicago Cubs, at least we thought we knew, maybe we still do know, is that Justin Steele would be the opening day starter for the Chicago Cubs when they eventually do open the season Thursday, March 28th at Texas. But ladies and gentlemen, that has been put into some jeopardy. We'll welcome you back into the program. I am Mark Grody on The Score. Get to be with you until 9 o'clock. We've talked a ton of Bears in the first couple of hours, but let us move on to baseball and the Cubs. And Mesa, Arizona, and that is where we find Chicago Cubs Tribune beat writer Megan Montemurro. Megan, thanks for joining us here on The Score.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So tell us what happened to Justin Steele today and where things are right now.
Yeah, so in his final spring start today at Sloan Park, starting off the second inning, he took a one hopper comebacker flush off, like kind of like right off the side of the outside of his left knee, went down pretty much immediately. It was a hard hit one. Ended up being able to, you know, gingerly walk off the field under his own power. Cubs ultimately said he basically has a bruise. And that's kind of where things stand right now. We didn't have a chance to talk to him after he came out. We're expected to talk to him tomorrow. Obviously, the Cubs will have a better idea of how his knee is feeling then. I think obviously you always just have some concern when you're this close to the start of the season and a freak thing like that happens. But until we have a chance to talk to him or Craig Counsell, it's definitely too soon to say whether or not it impacts his start on Thursday.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I mean, I'm glad it's not an arm or shoulder or anything like that, but I don't like that. I don't like the way that sounds. And I know we only have so much information. And as you said, Megan, you guys will be there with your recorders tomorrow to try to get the update. But God, yeah, it's way too close to March 28th for that to sound good. I just hope that he doesn't walk in like a walking boot or something crazy like that tomorrow. Maybe it's because Cubs fans have been hurt before. They are like Justin Steele, based on the season last year, slam dunk ace of the staff this year. How much better do you think, assuming he gets past this, that Justin Steele can get going into this season? Or does he come back to some sort of mean level that maybe some people thought he was at in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is when, you know, a pitcher or any player really is trying to establish themselves, you know, among the game's best, you are repeating those performances year in and year out. So I think that's going to be a good challenge for him. You know, can he be that guy for them again, bring that consistency? You know, they've had guys like that, obviously, when you think of Kyle Hendricks or, you know, the seasons they would get from John Lester. Like, you know, to be the best, you have to replicate that year after year. And so, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see how teams, you know, try to, you know, adjust to him. Obviously, they didn't do it very successfully last year, and it's just, you know, that two-pitch mix between his fastball and slider and the way he's able to make those pitches run and cut is just really impressive, and not many pitchers, especially starters, are able to do what he does like that. So, yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is, like, durability, getting through another full season, being a guy that goes six-plus, you know, every time out. And, yeah, I mean, I think obviously getting the opening day start is an indicator of their belief in him and what they think he can do again this year. And now it'll be on him to go out there and prove it.
So hopefully on March 28th, Justin Steele will be the man. So the second start rolls around, the second man of the rotation. I imagine it's supposed to be Jameson Taillon, but where is he with his injury? Is he going to be ready to go to start the season?
No, I mean, he'll be on the IL to start the year. You know, he had a bullpen today. The hope is he faces live batters soon. But at this point, you know, mid-April return would be the optimistic time frame at this point. I mean, before his injury, he didn't even get into a Cactus League game yet. He had only thrown a three-inning simulated game on the backfields against minor league hitters. So he definitely is going to need to build up and get his pitch count up, get the innings up, especially since now he's at about 2 weeks, I want to say, since he last faced batters. So he's almost starting back at the beginning in terms of, you know, his build up and the progression that he needs to get to. So mid-April would be the optimistic time frame at this point, and that's, you know, assuming he's able to build up the way he needs to in the next couple weeks.
Okay. All right. So no Taillon to begin the season. I'm catching up a little bit here too. Justin Steele, hopefully he'll be good to go. And then after that, then what? Who are the next, like, between Hendricks and Imanaga and Wicks, how do you think it lines up unless it's already out there?
Yeah, I mean, so they haven't declared anything yet in terms of the order that they're going to roll out the rotation. But if you're just looking at who they have coming up starting these next spring games as they close out the next couple days, tomorrow is Ben Brown, who's not going to be part of the rotation. And then Sunday is Kyle Hendricks. Monday is Jordan Wicks. And then presumably it'll be Shota Imanaga for the final spring game on Tuesday. So if they keep that order, then that would mean Hendricks starts game two in Texas, and you'd have Jordan Wicks starting game three, and then that lines up Shota Imanaga for the home opener. Now, obviously, as I said, none of this is official. This
Got
is
you.
Just how they have currently lined them up to close out the spring schedule. But if they kept that order in place, that's how it would align to start the season. Then you'd have Javier Assad wrapping up the first turn through the rotation.
Wow, that is good math and memory by you. Thank you for working through that right there. Because that, and I know that you're not saying that is what it's going to be, but it does sound like a pretty good map to the season. And we still got to learn a couple things before we can make that official. By the way, really quickly, is Carl Edwards Jr. making this team? Is he in the bullpen, or is he going to be in the minor leagues?
I mean, I think he has a really good chance of making this team. I mean, Craig Counsell, when asked about him today, said the main thing they wanted to see from him this spring was, you know, is he healthy? And he showed pretty quickly that he was after dealing with a shoulder injury for parts of last season. So, you know, they really could use another veteran right-hander down there. You know, talking to Ian Happ today. You know, he was saying how CJ and Hector Neris, how good they've been with this relief group and bringing some more veteran experience to them. And, I mean, when Edwards is healthy, like, he can still be a very good big league reliever. Now, he does it a little differently than he did, you know, the first time he was with the Cubs. You know, he's added a changeup the last 2 years that he relies on a lot more. It's been a pretty effective weapon for him. He doesn't give up pretty much any extra base hits off of it the last two seasons. So the way he goes about his success has changed a little bit since the last time he had a Cubs uniform on. But he can still be a successful big league pitcher. And so I would not be surprised if he ends up making the team, that they'll have one spot open where they won't have to make a 40-man move, because mm-hmm. they'll be putting Caleb Killian on the 60-day IL. So that will open a spot for a non-roster guy. So that very well could be Carl Edwards Jr. They haven't made any decisions yet, but I would not be surprised if that's ultimately who the spot goes to.
Talked a lot of pitching so far with Megan Montemurro, Cubs beat writer for the Chicago Tribune. I'm Mark Grody on The Score. Seiya Suzuki finished strong last season, seemed to get on track, 938 OPS in the second half of the season. How has he looked in this spring, and do you think that this is the season in which we see the Seiya Suzuki that a lot of people had promised the Cubs?
I mean, he's looked fantastic. Obviously you can't use spring performance necessarily as an indicator for how a player will start the year or how his season will play out. But, I mean, he has looked locked in. He's showing everything that you would want to see with the way that he finished last year. And I think it's important to remember, like, the last two springs have been abbreviated for him. He hasn't had a true full spring until this year. He signed a couple weeks into spring 2 years ago, and then he had the oblique injury that kept him out for most of last spring. And so he's had the opportunity to, you know, get the amount of live at-bats that he's wanted, seeing live pitching, being able to get comfortable to the point that, you know, he feels ready for the start of the season. And, I mean, if he can be the type of hitter that the Cubs envisioned when they signed him, I mean, he showed what he can do in those last 2 months, putting up MVP caliber numbers over a 2 month stretch. I mean, if he's doing that from the middle of the lineup, I mean, that's a huge boost, and it just makes, obviously, that group so much better.
Yeah, no doubt, man. It would be great. It would be great to see him kind of realize his potential at the big league level, and this, it would seem that he's got everything on his side to make that happen. Third base, Megan, it seems like this is for real. They're rolling with, and I know it's not going to be Christopher Morel every single day at third base, but they're serious about Christopher Morel at third base, right?
Yeah, I mean, they've definitely given him this spring to show, like, he's capable of handling it. And, you know, Craig Counsell has acknowledged, and so has Jed Hoyer, that, you know, it's still going to be a work in progress. There's going to be mistakes. You know, that some of those have showed up in spring games. But he's also going to make some fantastic plays, which he's also shown this spring. So, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see how willing they are to live with some of those things and for how long. And that's going to be the key. I mean, right now you have Nick Madrigal, who's questionable to be ready for opening day. Patrick Wisdom has already been ruled out that he's going to be on the IL to start the season. So outside of Miles Mastroboni right now, they don't have really any other third base option to start the season. So, you know, he's going to get his chance to show that he deserves to play there every day, and that defensively he can handle it well enough that he can be close to league average for them to, you know, feel comfortable with the offensive production compared to what he's doing defensively there.
How's Dansby Swanson doing? I mean, like, he's about the regular season at this point in his career, but how's he been doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, for any of those guys, him, you know, Cody Bellinger, Ian Happ, they're really not worried about what numbers might be put up during spring. It's really guys are working on feeling comfortable, whether that's, again, certain pitch types, whether it's getting their timing down, you know, against fastballs, whether they're seeing off-speed stuff well. It's honestly, like, I know it's a cliche that spring performance, you know, some teams care about it, some don't, and the Cubs and Craig Counsell just really want guys to feel comfortable where they're at. The numbers are there, you know, like Suzuki has put up, great, but that, you know, spring numbers aren't going to really impact the vision or how they build their batting order going into the season. So for all those guys, whether it's Dansby, Bellinger, Happ, it's really just been about getting in the games, getting into game shape, and getting ready to go. I think the big thing for Dansby is he's getting used to having Morel playing to his right every day, and then on the flip side, you know, the infield as a whole is getting used to Michael Busch being at first base and getting accustomed to the timing that, you know, he has in terms of getting over to first base. They've been working with Busch on trying to really test where his range is, how far away he can set up defensively from the bag and still feel like he has enough time to get over there and get comfortable to receive a throw. So I would say maybe on the defensive end, it's more about, you're getting that infield used to playing together. Obviously, him and Nico up the middle have been stellar and are coming off Gold Gloves. But I think just as the infield as a whole, they're working on gelling together and getting kind of that rhythm down.
Yeah, that's a great point. I really hadn't thought of it that way. That, of course, Dansby and Horner look great, but different first baseman, different third baseman. They're professionals, so one would suspect that they'll be able to handle it, but that is definitely something that needs to be taken into account. And the last thing, Megan, I have for you is you brought up the Craig Counsell's name. I haven't mentioned him so far, but I don't know how you feel. I know there's not a lot we can project at this exact moment about Craig Counsell and what will be his Cubs managerial career, but I can't wait to see what he is like as the Cubs manager. And I know that a good reference point would probably be watch what he was like with Milwaukee, but I am very anxious to see how Craig Counsell is with all of this. Do you feel that intrigue too as we get closer to the actual stuff with Craig Counsell?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how he manages this team. I mean, I think one thing is obviously he has a reputation for how he managed his pitching staff in Milwaukee. And, you know, he's acknowledged, like, going into the season, he's still going to be learning his pitchers and learning their signs of, you know, when maybe he can leave them out there a little longer, when he maybe needs to go to the bullpen, learning how to trust his relievers in different situations and what their strengths are. Like, that is also going to be an ongoing process into the season as he continues to learn the players within the organization. So I think that's a really interesting component. And I mean, when you look at also those Brewers teams, like most years, he had a very proven closer that he could go to. You know, obviously for a lot of that was Josh Hader, and then you had Devin Williams in there as well. And, you know, I wouldn't really put Adbert Alzolay onto that same level right now. And so it's going to be really interesting who he trusts in those later innings. I think it's going to be interesting just to see kind of his managerial style, the patterns that maybe develop in certain game situations, you know, who he calls on in those moments. So I think I'm interested as well just to kind of see, you know, who he is as a manager with this organization and this group of players. And he's going to have a chance to obviously show fans the way he manages in Chicago. And he's not going to be a different person than he was in Milwaukee. I think that's important. He's going to stay true to who he is. The expectation is to win in Chicago. And so managing those expectations, especially their schedule for the first 5 weeks of the season, is pretty challenging. So they're definitely going to be tested at the start of the season.
Yep. Yeah, that is the truth. We're getting ready to rock with the Cubs. Thank you so much, Megan Montemurro. Appreciate your time and your insights as well. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Yep, absolutely. Megan Montemurro, always great here on The Score. And she writes for the Chicago Tribune about the Cubs just about every single day, starting right now. Next Thursday, March 28th, Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi will be live from 10 to 2 at Buffalo Wings and Rings on Halstead prior to the White Sox home opener, brought to you by Modelo. Then, Monday, April 1st, they'll be at Sluggers in Wrigleyville from 10 to 12:45, brought to you by BetMGM, before the home opener at Wrigley Field. Join Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi for both of those shows to kick off the baseball season on March 28th and April 1st right here on 670 The Score. Yeah, I had to ask the question to Megan Montemurro about Carl Edwards Jr. I mean, obviously the Justin Steele stuff was of most import. It sounds like Justin Steele is okay because it's a left knee injury. The word bruise was used, but we have to wait until tomorrow to find out. I don't like this at all. Thank God it's not the arm, but March 28th is a-coming, and you don't want to get ripped off of any Justin Steele to start this season, so we'll just see how he is tomorrow. But prognosis, it sounds like things are going to be okay with him. But the importance of Carl, you know the importance of Carl Edwards Jr., don't you, Alex? You understand why it's important to me that Carl is on the Cubs this year.
Because...
Did I get you?
You got me here.
Because Carl Edwards Jr. was on the mound in 2016 when the Cubs won the World Series.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I thought that it might have been something...
No. Oh, like something personal.
Deeper. Yeah, something personal.
No. Just
he was
that.
In your fantasy football league or something like that.
No. I didn't mean to lead you on that stray path right there. But, yeah, because he would be... By my count, and I was just doing this count a second ago, Carl Edwards, CJ Edwards, would be one of three, and correct, this is just what I'm thinking off the top of my head, Alex. If I'm wrong, fill in the blank. He would be one of three players and or coaches left from the 2016 World Series championship that are actually part of the Cubs organization right now on the field. And that would be if Carl, hey, he's there. So CJ Edwards, the other is Kyle Hendricks, and then the other one is Tommy Hotovy, the Cubs pitching coach. I don't think I'm missing anybody, am I?
You're not. You're definitely not missing another player.
Yeah, Kyle anybody Hendricks else come back? Anybody else?
The only player.
I know we get a lot of visitors here from those days, but I don't know that anybody else has come through. So it'd be kind of cool to have Carl Edwards there. Yeah, that his history is something, too, like when you go back. Since the Cubs, by the way. C.J. Edwards, Carl Edwards, 32 years old these days. Since the Cubs, he has played for the Padres, Mariners, Braves, Jays, Nats. I didn't think it was going to be like that for Carl Edwards Jr., honestly. Like, I thought he was going to be really good and stay in one place, but injuries and general ineffectiveness have hurt C.J. a little bit. He was originally, Carl Edwards, acquired from Texas in 2013 for... Oh, the Matt Garza era. Matt Garza. Cubs also got out of that deal. Ready for these names? Justin Grimm. Love Justin Grimm. Such a good guy. And really effective until he basically was burned out, I thought. Mike Ault, the third baseman. Old Mike Ault. Neil Ramirez. Oh, yeah, man. Remember how much Neil Ramirez and Justin Grimm were used before things got good? Like in the rebuild years? What was it, Ricky Renteria?
And Mike Ault, too, right?
And Mike Ault, too. I think Mike Ault. Mike Ault is actually a good trivia question because Mike Ault was kind of an obscure trivia question. But Mike Ault would be the answer to the question of who was the starting third baseman in Chris Bryant's rookie year for the Cubs? The year in which he won.
That's right.
Yeah.
We're
it was Mike Ault.
Chris Bryant needed a little more seasoning. He wasn't quite as good as Mike Ault. Like, nobody can't tell. It's 50-50 here.
And that might be part of why, because Chris Bryant, he'd been hurt before. He'd been hurt. And that's why he's like, I don't know anything about these Colorado Rockies, but that's a lot of money. Seems pretty cool there. That seems pretty cool. I like that. Colorado's a fun play. He's like, I got screwed when I was with the Cubs and by Major League Baseball. So, yeah, I like when we figure things out. Things are all coming together. In 2011, I'm going in some order here, but it was in 2011 that the Cubs, since we're talking about Matt Garza, Cubs acquired Matt Garza from Tampa Bay for old Sam Fold. Sam Fold, who had way more success with Tampa Bay. Also, Chris Archer. Yeah, Chris Archer came up in the Cubs organization but never threw a pitch for the Cubs at the big league level. Great dude. I had a chance to talk to him when I was on the Cubs tour. Really enjoyed that guy. Hawk Drew Lee, Brandon Geyer, and Robinson Chironas. Did I say that right? The Chironas? Yeah, so that's intersecting guys like Matt Garza and Carl Edwards. All right, we need to take a break. When we come back, you know what? It feels like I need to talk about more about the Chicago Cubs since I'm doing the Carl Edwards wormhole, just taking it everywhere. Maybe we come back, we talk a little bit about the Chicago Cubs, bring it back to 2024, and see what feels real for them in this year. If you want to jump in on the Cubs convo, I am here for you at 312-644-6767. Text lines are open. So are the phones. I'm Mark Grody. This is The Score.
Early holiday deals are here, and so are amazing deals at Amazon. You'll save so much on early holiday gifts for the home, like vacuums, bedding, and home decor. You'll have money left over for that ergonomic recliner to catch up on reading. Or falling asleep while reading. Or that standing mixer to whip up some holiday cookies. Oh, what fun it is to save. Shop early holiday deals now.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get back to more Mark Grody on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I must have characterized Tommy Hotovy, Cubs pitching coach, as the Cubs pitching coach back in 2016 as well.
I don't think you did, though.
Okay. I've had a couple texters. Thank you. I appreciate that, Alex. I was going to ask you, but I had a couple texters saying that I said that Tommy Hotovy was the pitching coach back in 2016, as we are collecting players or coaches that are with the team now that won the championship in 2016. And I said, CJ Edwards, he's back, Kyle Hendricks, and Tommy Hotovy. So, but I don't think I said pitching coach. Maybe people assume that or projected that in their brain right
away. Yeah, he's the pitching coach now, was not the pitching coach then.
Right, but Tommy Hotovy, I can tell you, I did pre-post 15, 16, and 17, and in those days, Tommy Hotovy was one of the analytics guys. He was one, Joe Maddon always referenced them kindly as the geeks, the baseball geeks that he would talk to and reference. And I'd see Tommy Hotovy running around the locker room with, you know, with his laptop in his hand.
I was there.
Yeah, always, I was there. Tommy always had something to do. I mean, you could tell, like, watching Tommy Hotovy in the background doing his job, you could tell that dude was serious about his job and just the way he went about, buttoned up and, you know, followed all the right protocol and traveling party and all of that kind of stuff. And I always say that, like, I bring up traveling party and protocol because oftentimes on the buses to games back in the day, I would sit next to Tommy Hotovy and his laptop and his analytics and his computers and everything. So, yeah, I mean, I remember Tommy getting to where he is now, and that is as the pitching coach for the Chicago Cubs.
I was there.
And then Carl, somebody said, what was the texture? Let me go back. We'll fast forward to the present here in just a second. But there was another thing that somebody was asking me about in terms of clarification. And the clarification was on Carl Edwards and his role with the Cubs. And somebody said, I thought it was Mike Montgomery who was out there. Yeah, it was Mike Montgomery was the last man standing on the mound for the Cubs in 2016. But it was Carl Edwards who pitched two-thirds of an inning in the ninth inning, the strikeout of Mike Napoli, now with the Cubs, and the ground out of Jose Ramirez. And then, Brandon Guyer walked, Davis singled, Guyer scored. It's 8-7, still have two outs, still feeling pretty good, but not good enough. So Joe Maddon makes the march and says, thanks, CJ. We're going to give this baseball to Mike Montgomery, And then Mike Montgomery was able to get Michael Martinez out. Ground ball, a little slippage there by Chris Bryant. Come on, big fella, get up, throw it out over. Cubs win the World Series, and here we are. So, and that's all you need to know. There you go. It just took you through that whole thing right there. So C.J. Edwards, very important to me that he stays on this Cubs roster and that he thrives. And it's not just because, like, the nostalgia of the Cubs and Carl Edwards. I really like talking to that guy, like, low-key.
Y'all are writers.
Yeah, man. C.J., he always had time for me.
I knew I had some on my mind, but I just forgot.
C.J. Hey, I was there when he was C.J., and then he went back to Carl. Or was it the other way around?
We'll see you guys in L.A.
Yeah. And he always had time for me. Always. On or off the air. I love talking to that guy. And honestly, I haven't followed closely all the happenings of C.J. Edwards throughout his career, but he's been on a bunch of teams, and I'm sure he's done well financially, but it doesn't seem like it's worked out the way I thought it would work out for C.J. Edwards, just because he's got a live arm. He's got a live arm, C.J. Edwards. But that's C.J. Edwards. You know, another thing, we talked a lot about the Cubs starting pitching, and we'll see about Justin Steele tomorrow. Took one off his left knee today, looking like it's a bruise. Steele seemed to indicate that he's okay. Megan Montemurro, we had her on from the Tribune earlier tonight, so we're going to find out tomorrow. But the early indications don't feel like it's something catastrophic. But I don't know, man. Doesn't smell good to me. Jameson Taillon not going to be there until the middle of April at the earliest. So a little bit of concern atop of your starting rotation right now for the Cubs. But you got the wild card in Shota Imanaga. We all want to see what that's all about and how good that is. Because you never know. Like Imanaga could light it up. You never know. I mean, it could go the opposite way, too. He could come in cold and not have adjusted yet. But like, you like to think about that as being a positive wild card, the Shota Imanaga spot for the Cubs, but he becomes more important now that Taillon is down for a start or two, and then the heat is on Jordan Wicks. All of this to say, though, that this seems like a handy time for the Cubs to have a pretty good bullpen, and it's been a while since I've been able to say that about the Cubs, where you look at the beginning of the season and say, I mean, it's always easy to be critical of a bullpen because they're failed starters, and you may have even seen them fail as relievers in other places, but it's just the way of the world with relievers. But this group that they have right now with Adbert Alzolay, who is the closer for the Cubs, and he earned that last year, Adbert Alzolay coming back with Hector Neris, that's pretty sick. Like those, like Neris can close you a game and be good. I felt like Julian Merriweather, hopefully his arm is fresh this year, used a ton. How do you not like Javier Assad and what he does, what he brings for you? Yency Almonte as well. I don't really know much about him, to be honest with you, but they did acquire him in the offseason. Am I leaving anybody out in terms of the bullpen? Smiley. What about Drew Smiley? He's still on the Cubs, right?
He is.
Yeah.
He started a couple games this spring. But okay. That's what kept them out of the playoffs last year.
Bullpen.
The bullpen. And yeah. I it was health at the end of the season, but that is what kept them out of the playoffs.
Yeah, that's true. So maybe, God, these starters better be ready to go. Because, yeah, you don't want to overuse the bullpen like you did last year. And in the end, Cubs blew it. They blew it at the end of last year. They did. But we'll see what happens atop the rotation. Everybody says Seiya Suzuki is going to be good this year. That's what I'm hearing. Some of the evidence being what he did do at the end of the season last year when it was of consequence, a 938 OPS in the second half. And we know how important the second half of the season was last year, the final third of the season for the Cubs, really, how important that was. So, okay, I see you. I see you, Seiya. Now let's see it. On the field. So there's that. We're good with Belly. With the Belly, we're good. We're fine. With Ian Happ, we're good. I'm fine with him. We're good with him. Morrell, we'll see. They are
playing third base.
They
huh?
are really doing it. They
yeah,
were
they are.
Not kidding. I thought that at the beginning, okay, this is just what you say and do on the first day. It's like Mike Ault as your starting third baseman. Like, that's not really your plan, is it? And Yep. It sounds like it. Sounds like they're going to roll with it. But here's what I'm confident in, because this is not a team. This is a team on the rise. I don't know where they stack up right now. Because it's a team on the rise, they're not going to play with that. Like, I can't imagine that Craig Counsell, your $10 million manager, came in here to allow Christopher Morel to make errors at third base. No. So if he's making errors at third base, like if it gets untenable, there's that word again, then they'll pull him.
Yeah, you saw how what they've done with some of their prospects. It's not like they're like, oh no, we're building for the future. Let's let all these guys come up here and play right now. And no,
that's a great point. Yeah, PCA being the best example of that. Like I could imagine Craig Counsell. Not yet. We know Craig Counsell.
Like, bats.
You know, Counsell probably heard that in Milwaukee. You probably heard all of us of all our PCA silliness, like wanting that guy to be great right out of the chute. I mean, he probably picked up some of that on his radar in Milwaukee. You know, he's a score listener. He was probably, yeah, you guys need to just, this guy's going to be great. But just, guys, he needs work. PCA needs work. There's no doubt. We saw it last year. He came in and he wasn't able to hit the fastball. That's a problem. That's a problem. And I still think that he's going to be good, and he could be your starting center fielder in the next couple of years with the way Cody Bellinger's contract is. That's still very plausible, but good for, you know, Craig Counsell, who probably had a lot to do. That's just my guess. He probably had a lot to do with the decision to right away to say PCA ain't going to happen, and let's keep a professional as the backup right now, and Mike Talkman. Say what you want about Talkman, but Talkman's a professional baseball player.
Yeah, I was surprised that that was as much of a debate as it was.
Oh, you mean having PCA on the roster?
like, let him go try to learn how to hit a fastball. They throw those in Iowa, I swear.
They do.
They throw very hard. They don't know where it goes. It's going all the time, but they do throw it hard in AAA.
Yeah. Yeah. It's 101 stuff, and I think that's what Craig Counsell thought, too. He's like, oh, okay. Not that Jed Hoyer didn't see that and other people in the organization. I mean, Craig Counsell's not a superhero coming in here, and he's the one that realized if you can't hit a fastball, you can't play in the bigs. But I think you know what I mean. There's a little bit more owner. It never felt like that with David Ross. It always felt like there was such a connection between first Theo Epstein and Ross, and then with Jed Hoyer and Ross. It never felt like, not that that was bad for them, like, and that's what worked out. I feel like there's a little bit more autonomy in thinking when it comes to Craig Counsell. At least those are the indications that I've been picking up on the Cubs. We need to take a final break here on the show. When we come back, I have to say something about the NCAA tournament. I mean, we've got them on our televisions here in the Score studios. So I will have something to say about the NCAA tournament when we return on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Oakland has one NCAA tournament victory. It was in the opening round, a play-in of sorts in 2005. This is it as Kentucky inbounds. They get it in. The throw to the front. Reeves, three-point jumper. No good. Golke down with the rebound. Maybe now they know where Oakland is. There are the history books. An 80-76 upset victory over Kentucky. The Golden Grizzlies of Oakland have won. They've survived. They've advanced here in the 2024 NCAA tournament in a game for the ages.
Highlights courtesy Westwood One. Oakland upsetting Kentucky last night 80-76. I had flipped it on. I was tracking that game because that's what's fun about the NCAA tournament, tracking those upsets. When you start to see a score get away from one of the powerhouses like that, then you start to begin to tune in. I never get excited about the 10-2 starts when it's a higher seed against a low seed, but it's still the second half and it's still close. Then you start to have to tune into it. And that is the NCAA tournament is astounding and amazing. It is. And this is a little bit of a departure from how I usually talk about the NCAA tournament, but there is no sporting activity in this country that delivers what we want delivered on an annual basis every single year. We get exactly what we came for. And in a lot of cases, it's those upsets. It's the gambling. It's maybe, well, I think this tournament actually is lacking a star, but it doesn't disappoint. The NCAA tournament has all its little things, and they all sprout every year the exact same way. With, and there's always something incredible that occurs. There's always a Sister Jean along the way, or a Butler along the way, or a great team like the Kansases or the North Carolina or the Dukes. It always delivers. Nothing delivers better than the NCAA tournament. And I always say, like, as I've never been a huge fan of the NCAA tournament, or for a long time I haven't been, because I'm just not a big college basketball fan. Like, I think a lot of people that listen in Chicago, or certainly a certain segment of them. I root for DePaul, but that's another story. I like Illinois. Like, I'm down with Illinois. I will root for Illinois in this tournament. They beat Morehead State. I will root for Northwestern. They beat Florida Atlantic today. But I've never really feel the tournament maybe the way other people do, and I usually would kind of push back on NCAA tournament people because they were over the top trying to sell it and tell me that it's the greatest sporting thing in the world and there's nothing better than it. I still say that there's many sporting events better than the NCAA tournament, including the Super Bowl. I'd even put the World Series ahead of it, and maybe that's a list I can go through at some point in time. But there is no doubt that the NCAA tournament delivers exactly what you want and stuff like that. And that's what I caught last night. The Oakland win over Kentucky, I got glued to it. Even if it's not the greatest sporting event in the world, it was great.
It takes all of the flaws of college basketball and packages them up into an entertaining product,
yes,
that we can all enjoy.
It's true.
Terrible officiating.
Oh, it's so bad.
Like, teams with one and dones and no system that have issues, like, they're facing a smaller school, and all of a sudden they don't have that big of a lead in the second half.
Right.
You're like, well, wait a second. This team didn't just fold.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
This team just didn't give up when we rolled the ball out here. It's great.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it is fascinating what
you're right, because the play stinks. But I don't even like
That Northwestern FAU game.
Yeah. Yeah.
So many missed layups. I've never seen that many missed layups.
It's embarrassing after a while when you watch it, but you just can't think of it in terms of you're going to see a great basketball product. But somehow you get exactly what you want out of this thing. Congratulations to anybody who's won money. I am sorry to those of you who have lost money. Alex Kuhn, our executive producer. Sounds like
Thank
you're doing
you to
all right.
Yale today.
Oh, yeah. Yale
Appreciate
did you good.
Yale. And Oakland last night.
Oh, good.
Well, in-game money line action.
Really? Oh, yeah. You are
You
shrewd.
Can sense it. You can sense when a higher seed starts to choke a little bit.
Oh, my God.
You can feel it.
I feel you, man. I probably should have come to you. That's Alex Kuhn, our executive producer. He put this show together, does a great job getting our NFL guests on the clock. BTW, since we were talking about college hoopage. You know me. Hoops. Tune in tomorrow from 7 to 9 a.m. for BetQL's You Better You Bet countdown to tip-off as Nick Costos and Ken Barkley get you set for the best bets for the second round of the tournament. It's You Better You Bet's countdown to tip-off live tomorrow, 7 to 9 a.m. on 670 The Score and the Odyssey app. Thank yous also tonight to Trey Wingo, EJ Snyder, Megan Montemurro, and as I said, Alex Kuhn. I am Mark Grody. I'll talk to you tomorrow at some point in time during the Steve Rosenblum Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The nuns would have loved you.
Early holiday deals are here, and so are amazing deals at Amazon. You'll save so much on early holiday fashion gifts, like cozy fits and stylish shirts. You'll have money left over for the matching sweaters everyone definitely wants to wear for the holiday card.
Cheese.
Or that ugly holiday sweater that's like really ugly.
OMG, that's like really ugly.
Oh, what fun it is to save. Shop early holiday deals now.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oakland has one NCAA tournament victory. It was in the opening round, a play-in of sorts in 2005. This is it as Kentucky inbounds. They get it in. The throw to the front. Reeves, three-point jumper. No good. Golkey down with the rebound. Maybe now they know where Oakland is. They're in the history books. An 80-76 upset victory over Kentucky. The Golden Grizzlies of Oakland have won. They've survived. They've advanced here in the 2024 NCAA tournament in a game for the ages.
Highlights courtesy Westwood One. Oakland upsetting Kentucky last night, 80-76. I had flipped it on. I was tracking that game because that's what's fun about the NCAA tournament, tracking those upsets. When you start to see a score get away from one of the powerhouses like that, then you start to begin to tune in. I never get excited about the 10-2 starts when it's a, you know, a higher seed against a low seed. But is it, okay, oh, it's still the second half and it's still close. Then you start to have to tune into it. And that is the NCAA tournament is astounding and amazing. It is. And this is a little bit of a departure from how I usually talk about the NCAA tournament, but there is no sporting activity in this country that delivers what we want delivered on an annual basis. Every single year, we get exactly what we came for. And in a lot of cases, it's those upsets. It's the gambling. It's maybe, well, I think this tournament actually is lacking a star, but it doesn't disappoint. The NCAA tournament has all its little things, and they all sprout every year the exact same way with, and there's always something incredible that occurs. There's always a Sister Jean along the way, or a Butler along the way, or a great team like the Kansases or the North Carolina or the Dukes. It always delivers. Nothing delivers better than the NCAA tournament. And I always say, like, as I've never been a huge fan of the NCAA tournament, or for a long time I haven't been, because I'm just not a big college basketball fan. Like, I think a lot of people that listen in Chicago, or certainly a certain segment of them. I root for DePaul, but that's another story. I like Illinois. Like, I'm down with Illinois. I will root for Illinois in this tournament. They beat Morehead State. I will root for Northwestern. They beat Florida Atlantic today. But I've never really feel the tournament maybe the way other people do. And I usually would kind of push back on NCAA tournament people because they were over the top trying to sell it and tell me that it's the greatest sporting thing in the world and there's nothing better than it. I still say that there's many sporting events better than the NCAA tournament, including the Super Bowl. I'd even put the World Series ahead of it, and maybe that's a list I can go through at some point in time. But there is no doubt that the NCAA tournament delivers exactly what you want and stuff like that. And that's what I caught last night. The Oakland win over Kentucky. I got glued to it. Even if it's not the greatest sporting event in the world, it was great.
It takes all of the flaws of college basketball and packages them up into an entertaining product yes. that we can all enjoy.
It's true.
Terrible officiating.
Oh, it's so bad.
Like teams with one and dones and no system that have issues. Like they're facing a smaller school, and all of a sudden they don't have that big of a lead in the second half.
Right.
You're like, well, wait a second. This team didn't just fold.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
This team just didn't give up when we rolled the ball out here. It's great.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it is. It is fascinating what the
You're right, because the play stinks. But I don't even like
that Northwestern FAU game.
Yeah, yeah.
So many missed layups. I've never seen that many missed layups.
It's embarrassing after a while when you watch it, but you just can't think of it in terms of you're going to see a great basketball product. But somehow, you get exactly what you want out of this thing. Congratulations to anybody who's won money. I am sorry to those of you who have lost money. Alex Kuhn, our executive producer. Sounds like
Thank
you're doing
you to
all right.
Yale today.
Oh, yeah.
Appreciate
Yale did you good.
Yale. And Oakland last night.
Oh, good.
Well, in-game money line action.
Really? Oh, yeah. You are
You
shrewd.
Can sense it. You can sense when a higher seed starts to choke a little bit.
Oh, my God.
You can feel it.
I feel you, man. I probably should have come to you. That's Alex Kuhn, our executive producer. He put this show together, does a great job getting our NFL guests on the clock. BTW, since we were talking about college hoopage. You know me. Hoops. Tune in tomorrow from 7 to 9 a.m. for BetQL's You Better You Bet countdown to tip-off as Nick Costos and Ken Barkley get you set for the best bets for the second round of the tournament. It's You Better You Bet's countdown to tip-off live tomorrow, 7 to 9 a.m. on 670 The Score and the Odyssey app. Thank yous also tonight to Trey Wingo, EJ Snyder, Megan Montemurro, and as I said, Alex Kuhn. I am Mark Grody. I'll talk to you tomorrow at some point in time during the Steve Rosenblum Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The nuns would have loved you.
Early holiday deals are here, and so are amazing deals at Amazon. You'll save so much on early holiday gifts for the home, like vacuums, bedding, and home decor. You'll have money left over for that ergonomic recliner to catch up on reading. Or falling asleep while reading. Or those gingerbread scented candles that help with the illusion that you made the dessert yourself. Oh, what fun it is to save. Shop early holiday deals now.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.